Kelly Farina is a paragliding guide as well as running thermaling and cross-country courses. In this podcast, he talks about advanced thermaling techniques. It does not cover finding thermals or explaining what thermal is. It's aimed primarily at pilots who have been flying for a while, have a lot of thermaling practice, and who know their glider well, i.e. they know the stall and spin point so they can take a wrap safely. Firstly, Kelly talks about the common mistakes he's observed on his courses.
What I'd like to touch on today is like the physical turning of the glider, the technique, the concepts of turning the wing efficiently. And first of all, starting maybe by talking about the common mistakes and then going through the five main points that I may have touched upon. These rules are not about how to find thermals. These rules are what to do when you're actually in one. Yeah, it explains physically turning the glider efficiently and with feeling. That's very important, with feeling. Hopefully, it will allow pilots to instinctively place the glider in the right part of the climb and, more importantly, stay there. But once you master these rules or this concept, pilots should be able to climb in even the tightest or the lightest of climbs. So the common mistakes that I see in order of importance, among others, are the first one is turning way too wide, mainly because pilots are scared or unaware of the spin or stall point of their wing. So the next one is diving the wing. So when you're initially turning the glider, diving the wing, swinging through, and most will recognize this as an increase in airspeed and a light pushing or G-force effect into the harness. And by doing this, you're converting height to speed. So this is a very common mistake. The next one is, unfortunately, the BHPA are still in 1995 mode when they're teaching pilots. And this is crossing the legs, i.e. applying 100% weight shift. Okay, it's not subtle enough. Now, there's nothing wrong with full weight shift. Don't have to do it with crossing your leg. But not all the time. Okay, you should be able to balance on one arch cheek and be able to go from neutral to on or neutral to half, you know. There's a billion different shades. And not keeping enough energy in the wing, and from above, you would see it as the pilot making 360s in the shape of a 50 pence piece. And with lots of small inefficient dives every time they pull the brake to go around in circles. Theory tells us that as long as you turn in lift at a desired radius and bank that doesn't increase the sink rate to that higher climb, there is no reason that a paraglider can't climb in it. So basically, if you can turn your glider, by turning the glider, you don't increase the sink rate to that more than the climb, there's no reason why you can't climb in it. So that goes with mapping the climb, but that's a little bit more in depth. So you can always put the wing tip in the center of the thermal, that you're not just going in and out, in and out, in and out. And there's another common mistake that I see, but this is also, again, this is probably the most dangerous of the lot. It's like not joining the thermal in the correct way or with any kind of, manner is the wrong word, without basically jumping on the roundabout without looking for the gap. Okay, I see many, many pilots that they don't understand the basic principle that you should join the side of the thermal that you see the back of the pilot, not the front of them. I know that sounds very, very straightforward when you're sitting on the ground, but I see it time and time again that pilots, if I'm making a right-hand turn, they will try and join the thermal coming towards me on my left. Now, there is no way that pilot can efficiently join the climb. If he joins it to the right of me and waits for me to go round and then ducks in behind me, that's a far more efficient way of doing it. Now, the way that this, say, the pilot that I'm talking about, could be anybody, but he's made a mistake, he's come towards me, he hasn't realized it, and he has to go to the right as he's looking at me, and I'm going to the right. Now, what he has to do is then make a right-hand turn and then come in behind me. So in that time that it's taken for me to do a full 360 in lift and him to do a full 360 away from me, not in lift, I'm probably going to be a good 50 metres higher than him, depending on the strength of the thermal, obviously. But it's going to take 20 seconds for him to join the thermal. So that's 20 seconds at 2 metres a second or 3 metres a second. That's between 40 and 60 metres that I've gained on him just because he didn't go to the right side of the thermal and jump in behind me or in front of me. Now, I see that time and time and time again. I think it's actually one of the more dangerous mistakes I see, because they are now facing head-on to the pilots who are coming towards them in the thermal, rather than peeling off, looking for the gap on the roundabout, and then jumping in behind a pilot or opposite the pilot. The rest, the worst that can happen is that you fall out of the thermal by making the other mistake. But this mistake, you can end up entangled in somebody else's lines. It's not a lot of the fun.
Having looked at the common mistakes, how can these be rectified?
Okay, so the five main rules, and like I said, these are nothing to do with finding thermals. These are what you should be doing once you find one and how to efficiently stay in it. Number one is take a wrap. The reasons being is that we're looking for small differences in pressure between the left and the right side of the glider. Now, when your hands are very, very low and you're turning tight, you're using big muscle groups. And big muscle groups are great for picking yourself up, but they're not great for detecting small changes in pressure. Now, I've never put a Newton meter onto a set of brakes. I have no idea how much pressure we are looking for, and so I'm not that nerdy. It's important to take a wrap so your hands are high, so you're using your wrist muscles and your bicep as opposed to your tricep and your lat. Like I said, big muscle groups are great for moving heavy things, but we're not moving heavy things. So taking a wrap is very, very important. It's not without risk, but it definitely makes the pilot feel more in tune with the glider. And like I said before, I don't know any good pilots who fly with me who don't take a wrap, but obviously treat it with caution. Okay, number two is to float the outside. Now, what that means is when you hit a thermal, or if a thermal hits you, the glider gets rocked back, you wait, be late, wait for the glider to come forward, damp the surge. Now, before you stop moving through the air, i.e. feel a very large decrease in airspeed, you should already have your hands up, ready to turn. Okay, so you choose your direction, which to turn, left or right, up to you. You lean in, you pull your inside brake, and as the glider starts to turn, now if you do nothing with the outside, you will enter a spiral dive because you've entered the climb, or you've gone in with a lot of energy or with enough energy. Okay, so if you don't check the dive with the outside brake, and you have to experiment with your glider how much outside brake you need, and you don't need to apply the brake and keep it on, you just need it to stop the dive, okay? Just to float it. All you're doing is just floating the outside of your wing so you don't dive, so you don't swing through the air, because every time you swing through the air, like the common mistake is that you'll feel an increase in airspeed on your face and you'll lose height. Now, if that thermal is weak, and all you're doing is a series of small spiral dive entries, you won't climb. All you'll do is just slowly spiral your way through the thermal. Yeah, rule number three for myself is don't lock your weight shift. The BHPA teach us when we're soaring in the UK that we're flying along with the ridge to our left, and we want to turn to the right away from the hill, obviously. We're flying at min-sync. Now, we cross our leg wildly from left to right, put all our weight on one arse cheek, and just lift up the left hand. That was how I was taught back in the late 90s, and I'm sure that's how they still teach today, because it's a very, very easy method for getting people to understand how to turn the glider. But it's not very efficient. So locking the weight shift, not a good idea, because flying paragliders is a black art, thermaling is a black art, which means it's very subtle. So by crossing your legs, that's not very subtle, you know. Your weight shift is then on. Now, there are a billion and one shades of brake pressure or brake configuration and weight shift configuration. So you don't want to limit yourself to just weight shift on, weight shift off, and then switch to the other side, weight shift on. Okay? So it helps if you have a stirrup so you can roll in the harness. Okay, you can roll your hips left and right. Sometimes you want to go a little bit straighter. You don't want to dig in so much. You want to go a little bit straighter. So if you're turning to the right, you will just apply your balance point more to the center of the harness. Still leaning right, but not on. Not completely on. I think that's quite an important unspoken about rule. It's getting better the more I see pilots having stirrup harnesses, but the old school pilots or pilots with old school harnesses, they are still leaning out of the harness for very, very light thermals. The glider is got way too much weight shift on one side and they're locked on. So when they feel these subtle differences, they can't react to them. Now, the reason why the BHPA teach this is because in 1995, we had very hard cross-braced harnesses. And if you didn't hang out the side, the glider wouldn't turn. The gliders didn't turn very well anyway. But modern harnesses, modern canopies, they don't need to have 100% weight shift or 90% weight shift on all of the time when you're thermaling. If you use this method, it may be okay in the flatlands of Spain in midsummer, but you go somewhere challenging and you will be the first on the ground. That's just my opinion. And it's what I see time and time and time again. Rule number four is to keep the glider in its happy place. Now, everybody knows that it's the weight of the pilot and harness hanging underneath the canopy that gives it its wing loading and keeps the thing open. Now, if the glider is at 90 degrees to yourself, i.e. right in front of you, you have 0% wing loading and expect a front stall. If the glider is 45 degrees in front of you, expect 50% wing loading and you could take a tuck. Okay, so the happy place is more or less straight above your head or a little bit in front. Okay, the reason why I say a little bit in front is because it keeps the energy. If you keep it too far behind, you have no energy. And every time you want to turn your glider, you have to get that energy from somewhere. And there's no extra points for guessing where that energy comes from. It comes from you diving and losing height. You know, you can't get energy from nothing. So you get the potential energy from the glider diving forward, you swinging through the air, and you can turn the glider again. Or it goes all mushy, and it's a really ugly, messy feeling. Okay, so that one's pretty self-explanatory. And you don't have to be a rocket scientist to have worked that one out anyway. But keeping the glider in a happy place, or slightly in front of you, means you can turn easier and also makes the glider stay open because you're loading it. Yeah, the fifth rule is to map the climb. Okay, so what that basically means in a nutshell is to run to the beeps and run away from the sink. I can talk for quite a while about how to map a climb, but without gliders in front of me and without physical things to actually show and diagrams, it's very, very tricky. It is something to do with the 270-degree rule, which means that when you hit the climb and you're not sure which way to turn, and you turn, you're beeping, the vario is beeping, and you turn to the right, but you make a small mistake, it was to the left. So as you go around, about 270 degrees, you then run to where you felt the strongest beats. Pull on harder on the brake, lean in, pull on, outside brake to steady the dive. And hopefully, if you do this two or three times, this 270-degree rule, you will find the core every time. But like I said, it's hard to talk about without physical things in front of you and with a demonstration. If pilots stick to these rules, and this is, like I said, this is nothing to do with finding them. You know, that is a whole different subject in the first place. But this is the cornerstone of cross-country flying. Everybody is so, not brainwashed, but everybody measures their success by numbers. A lot of, or maybe not everybody, but an awful lot of pilots measure their success in numbers. They're looking always for the destination. They're not looking for the road to get to the destination and understanding and enjoying learning the thermal. And for me, thermaling is the cross-country is the cornerstone. Without it, you know, anybody can like just black down wind, but as soon as it gets tricky, on the ground. As simple as that. If you can't get out, if you can't use every thermal that nature throws at you, then you are on the ground. And the more you practice these rules, the more you have them wired, you notice that you are the pilot who stays up when it's challenging and everybody else is in the bottom landing field, or you go for a long-haul flight. Because it's a little bit inverted around launch, you manage to get out, and all your buddies are at the bottom of the landing field or have to slope land, depending where you are. By practicing, you'll find that the hard work pays off and the numbers get bigger themselves if you're chasing numbers. It's a road. It's not just a destination. 100K doesn't come easy.
Many thanks.